You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Welcome to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Now, your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan.
Well, Mike Brennan, anyway, Matt is out today. He's covering some soccer games or announcing some soccer games. Anyway, we let him off today, and we won't name that guest, but we're waiting for a guest to call in, and she has not yet done that. So it's Jessica and I in studio. Now, you don't normally hear Jessica's voice very much, but we've got a few minutes to fill here waiting for the second guest to come in at 3:15. So this is our 100th show today. Now, we were going to install the Jessica cam, but she was not really excited about that idea yet. So, right? Is that something?
Yeah, I seem to be a little against it.
Yes, that would be the word.
That
against
means
it.
I have to do a full face of makeup, though.
Yes, yes. Well,
that's time consuming.
I know all of you folks out there are waiting to see what she looks like, but you'll have to wait another week here until we get that installed. Although we do have, I guess I'm looking at a camera in studio, so we can do that when we're ready to do that, right?
Yep, we do have a cam in here for video when people want to record as well.
Okay. Well, anyway, so yes, this is not what we were planning, but sometimes when you do live radio, even if it is an internet radio, it's still live radio, and things happen, well, then you got to wing it. So that's what we're doing here for a few minutes, but gives us a chance to talk about our 100th show. Matt Rausch and I have been doing this for a little over 2 years, M Squared TechCast. You may even wonder where that name came from. We were thinking of the Matt and Mike show, but, you know, there's already some on ESPN and some other sports shows that sound very similar to that. So we went with M Squared, Matt and Mike, so that's where that name came from. And what we try to do is have really great programming that highlights what's happening in Michigan technology, in Michigan entrepreneurship, and sometimes those fields cross and we get a really great technology entrepreneur or more on the show. That's our sweet spot. And we also talk about events. We promote what's going on out there, and there's a lot of really good stuff going on out there. And later in the show, for instance, we're going to have David Cole, who's our auto guru. David Cole is the son of Ed Cole, who used to be the head of Chevy for GM. And David is like the guy that you always see quoted in stories in the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal whenever they need somebody to explain what's going on in the auto world. So today he's going to be talking to us about passenger car sales. They've actually gotten very weak as everyone's buying these crossover vehicles, which is not my cup of tea, but a lot of people like them. Also, what's happening with autonomous vehicles, what's happening in powertrain development, and that pesky Tesla. What's going on with them? They're having some issues with building their vehicles. And then GM stock price. Then in the third segment, we're going to have Maureen Miller Brosden, who is the executive director of the Michigan Venture Capital Association, and she'll be disclosing the nominees for this year's MVCA Awards, which are going to be given out on November 15th at Little Caesars Arena. And I haven't been in there yet, so I'm looking forward to attending the show, eyeballing what's going on there in what is now both a hockey and basketball venue. And then finally, we're going to, at 3:45, we'll have Dan Lorman, who's going to come in and talk about the fact that Kaspersky's antivirus software, well, it may be doing more than it should, and it may be an agent of the Russian Secret Service. We're not sure, but we do know that the government has banned the use of it for all government computers. And, of course, Equifax, yes, another hack. So we don't have a lot of confidence in Equifax these days. But anyway, so, Jessica.
Mike. So congratulations on your 100th episode.
Yes, thank
you. By the way.
Yeah, so couldn't do it without you. She's the backbone of the show. Keeps everything running smoothly here.
You're
trying to get
kind.
Dave to give her a big raise. That'd probably be a good idea, right? Big raise?
I agree.
Okay,
you
yes.
about that.
Well, he was here earlier. I was shooting some video earlier with Emily Ostele, who is my social media partner. We're experimenting with a new 1 minute social media update. So we shot 3 segments of that before the show went on the air. And so we just got lots of things going on. Now, the only thing we don't do is paper. I did newspapers for 20 years. That was enough for me. But we got everything else covered. Hey, and we even got a big event coming up. We pre-announced it earlier in the year, but then we had to change a few things. IoT Tech Connect. My partner on that is Rick Beckers from Cloud Tech One. And we're going to be doing that on April 4th at the Troy Marriott, a one-day show. We're going to be featuring all the really cool IoT stuff that's going on here in Michigan, autonomous vehicles, what's going on in virtualization and simulation, AR, VR glasses. There are a lot of companies involved with that, surprisingly, in Michigan. Cybersecurity, I mean, you can't just hook this stuff up to the internet and not have security involved. So we're going to be covering those issues. We're going to have a big track for STEM education for middle school and high school kids, that working with the Michigan Science Center and also with Monica Wheat, who puts on the big Entrepreneur Week in Detroit at the end of May every year. All these people that we work with, we're all going to be coming together to try to give you a great shoe on April 4th, which is a Wednesday at the Troy Marriott. More on that as we get the rest of those details worked out. What else do we do? Well, we also do video news update. Again, that's what I was shooting earlier with Mimele Ostele. I go to a lot of news events, and in some cases, these are paid content spots. Instead of doing a press release, they request that I come in and shoot a video of whatever the big announcement is, and then we post that up to the website. It gets great social media play. If you want more details on that, just email me at brennan@mitechnews.com, and I'll be happy to send you all that information. So we still got a few minutes left to fill.
I have to say, I'm glad that you guys went with M2 TechCast instead of the Mike and Matt show, because, I mean, at least that's not misleading.
Yes.
You know it's going to be about technology.
Yes, absolutely. Otherwise, you'd go, wait a minute, isn't there something on ESPN? We don't do sports. Unless there's a technology angle in sports. But, gosh, you know, technology is in everything these days. What is it not in? I mean, I was interviewing Steve Case last week, the co-founder of AOL, when he was in Ann Arbor for his Rise of the Rest road tour, where they're investing $100,000 in various companies, and they screened 8 Ann Arbor companies, or at least 8 Michigan companies, and awarded $100,000 to one of them. But when I brought up the topic of the Internet of Things, he goes, "Well, it's well beyond that. Now it's the Internet of Everything."
It is. People yes. have smart. God, they have smart refrigerators now, you know.
$5,000, yes.
Yeah.
Our friends over
the
at
Nest.
Whirlpool will sell you a $5,000 smart refrigerator, but I'm not sure I want everybody in the world to know what's in my refrigerator, right?
You know? No, so, that's weird to me. Like, I don't really need for my refrigerator to be
part
robot.
You're out of milk. Okay, that's cool, you know? So. Then the smart thermostats, smart homes, gosh, you know, but the other thing was these devices, getting back to the security angle, is there's been some botnet attacks where they've used these devices, but you have no security on them, or they do have security, but no one pays attention to it, to then launch botnet, what's called a dedicated denial service attack, where they ping a website so much that they bring the website down. And that's a weapon that's frequently used in cybersecurity by the bad guys.
Oh.
But we're winding down here. We're going to be going to commercial shortly, and hopefully this isn't going to be a filler show. Hopefully, we're going to have David Cole calling in at 3:15, and we'll be back in our regular programming. But we're going to go and sell an ad or two now for Lawrence Technological University. Thanks, Lawrence Tech, for backing the show. We'll be right back.
Lawrence Technological University graduates earn a degree and a higher starting salary. In fact, when it comes to earning potential, the Brookings Institution ranks LTU fifth among U.S. colleges and universities. Be enriched. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
As a Lawrence Technological University graduate, you're not only marketable, you're worth more. Yes, more. According to payscale.com, when it comes to graduate salaries, LTU is in America's top 100. Be invaluable. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Hey, it's Mike Brennan. We're back. Matt Rausch is out today on personal business, so you're stuck with me, but I think I can get through this okay. We have calling in from, I think, Ann Arbor, auto guru David Cole. How you doing today, David?
Just great. Well, this will be a tough day for you without Matt, but you might be able to do it.
Well, we keep our fingers crossed anyway. So I have your list of topics you wanted to talk about. It's everything from the weakness in the passenger car sales market to autonomous vehicles to powertrains to that pesky company called Tesla and GM stock. You want to take them in order or which one grabs
sure,
you that, first?
Sure, that's fine. I mean, I think one of the things that everybody in the industry has been amazed about is the success of crossovers, which a lot of people think of as trucks or SUVs, but they're really sort of an SUV version of cars on a passenger car structure. So they're lighter, they handle like cars, and they have a lot of utility. Both my wife and I, for example, have crossovers, and most of our friends do. And I think this is something that has surprised the industry, but they have to get used to it find out that it's going to be a long year.
Well, first it was station wagons, and then it was minivans, and now I guess we have the crossovers, right?
Yes, and the big advantage, I think, is the general utility, but with all the attributes of a passenger car. One of the big issues, and a lot of people are not aware of this, but is the stiffness, the bending, torsional stiffness of a vehicle, and typically cars, particularly with kind of a high waistline, are very structurally rigid. They tend to ride better, tend to have better handling. And that's what we see in the crossovers today. It's just an excellent combination, and I think the industry has done a fabulous job of it. They're just challenged now with how do you make more crossovers and less sedans.
Yeah, I'm not a big crossover fan. I did have a minivan when my daughter was very young, but haven't had one in, gosh, can't remember, 25 years. I'm just amazed. You see them everywhere, and everyone's doing them. I mean, even the high-end,
that's right.
You know, the Porsches are doing them, and just I'm waiting for a Ferrari one to come out next, right, you know?
So. Well, it's inevitable, and it's in the process of happening, but it still takes time to develop. For example, Cadillac had a lot of sedans, and then they had the big mega Cadillac SUV Escalade, but the SRX CT, I mean, they're just is what I have. I have the SRX. And it is just generally an excellent vehicle in terms of what it provides. Utility, good gas mileage, great handling, ride. That's one of the transitions that we're seeing.
All right. And then we're going to talk about autonomous vehicles. What's up with them?
Well, we're never not going to talk about autonomous vehicles because it's something that's very much in the news. Everybody's talking about it. A lot of people are bragging about it. But there is a tremendous amount of uncertainty. There's a great article in this month's Car and Driver, and I would suggest that anybody is interested in kind of checking in on the autonomous technologies that they look at this. For one thing, they talk about the five levels, 0 to 5, of everything from what we've always had to you're asleep on a trip. And what we're beginning to see now are some level 2 and level 3 autonomous vehicles. Cadillac has one coming here very shortly, Super Cruise, and the reviews have been absolutely outstanding on it, as on many of the other things. But I still think it's probably a little bit overhyped. And one of the issues that was raised in this article is extremely important, and that's the whole issue of liability. Who is going to be at fault for a problem? Is it going to be the driver? Is it going to be the car company? Is it going to be the tech company? And you can be sure the trial lawyers in every city, town, place in the country has a group of lawyers that are the trial lawyers. They advertise heavily, and they're always looking for new territory. And I think they're really salivating over the potential opportunities with these vehicles.
Okay. The other issue I think that's going to come up is if an autonomous vehicle gets into an accident and the driver's not driving it or anywhere near the control surfaces, whose fault is it?
That's the issue.
Yeah.
Is it the driver because he chose not to be near the wheel? Is it the company that produced the electronics, the controls, the computers? Is it the car company that owns the real estate that this was or developed the real estate that this is embedded in? And I think it's going to be very interesting. We had kind of a interesting case early on in Florida a couple of years ago where a Tesla that has sort of a autonomous technology in it where the driver was paying some attention to something else and drove under a big truck, semi, and basically cut his head off. And the question was, who was at fault? Was he not watching where he should have been? Did he trust the technology that he shouldn't have trusted? And Tesla was not found at fault in this, but it certainly raises a very critical issue. And one of the kind of the fascinating things about this is that we know with this technology, and it's one of the reasons I've been very supportive of it, we can have a dramatic impact on accidents, injuries, and fatalities by, in a sense, augmenting the capability or replacing the capability of drivers. And it's just something to watch. But I would caution people to be not too gullible to the overhype that's going on. It's really important, a very significant technology. And I think a lot of people think that, Silicon Valley is going to take over Detroit. I don't think that's the case. The hard thing to do, frankly, is really design and building the platform that this technology is in. And if it's going to be successful, it's going to be fairly inexpensive, which means the potential for profitability with the tech industry is not going to be as great as some people think.
Yeah. Okay. And I'm not one of those big believers. I think we're still 10 years out before I can get in the car and say, take me home. But who knows? Things can happen.
Well, I would say maybe more than 10 years, but we'll see.
Right.
I hope it's 30 years away. And I, in one sense, and I just want to live to see it,
mm-hmm.
which means I would be 110 years old. So
just keep working out, Dave. You can do it. Just, eat right, work out, you'll be fine. So,
I think I work out, but I don't think I eat right. I've never met a dessert I didn't like.
Okay, well, you got to give up
my curses.
You got to give up them cheeseburgers; those will kill you. So anyway, powertrains. What's happening with powertrains?
Well, it continues to be interesting, and we're seeing more and more areas. We're talking about in California, we're seeing it in Europe, we're seeing it in China. The idea that electrification is going to be mandated, it could be. I understand these areas have problems. And one of the things that kind of bothers me about this whole area is the perception that when you have an electric vehicle, you have a zero pollution vehicle. And the fact is there's no such thing as a zero pollution anything. You talk about electricity, you produce the electricity, you ship it to a house to charge the battery. All of these transitions have losses. For example, I think everybody in cold climate sees birching on power lines. Why do they do that? Just because they're there? No, it's because they're warm. When current flows through in a line like that, it's what we call the I square R loss. You take the current squared times the resistance, and that's heat. And so while we kind of talk about zero pollution, there really is no such thing. And we tend to get sort of waylaid in our ideas that this is perfect and this is not, and where the reality is that nothing's perfect. But certainly we're going to see more electrification. Key strategies are tied to this by the industry, but some very important breakthroughs are needed. One, for example, is a reasonable cost battery. And another is a battery that you can charge relatively quickly. And I don't know how quickly we're going to get to that point, but it's going to be an interesting thing.
Hi. Okay. So actually, I've seen a lot of coverage the last week where they were talking about how that China in general is going down the path of alternative energy sources, things like that,
right,
versus the United States with President Trump, who loves coal for some reason that no one can understand. We're going in complete opposite directions. So China gets it. Maybe the United States, or at least President Trump, doesn't, right?
Well, I'm not sure. I'm not sure, Mike. The reality is what's going to settle this over the long run is really the economics and the value to the consumer. The other thing, and obviously China has some really serious problems in their major urban areas, but China is a big country. People live all over that country. And I'm not sure we're going to see out in the rural areas quite the emphasis on electrification that we would see in some of the major urban areas. But it's a story that's unfolding, and it's kind of like autonomy, where you get this feeling by reading things that it's just on the horizon. And the answer is we don't know. One of the things that I felt for a long time, and you'll hear people say, well, we're going to have this, we're going to have that. And the people that say, well, this is, no option, we're going to have that. What that tells me is they don't know what they're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Because what we're really looking at is a lot of unfolding technology and drama, whether autonomy or with electrification. And until that becomes clear, for example, with batteries, if we can get down to less than $100 a kilowatt hour, that's a game changer. We're not anywhere close to that as yet. So stay tuned.
Well, we got about 3 minutes left. We got to cover Tesla and GM stock price.
Well, quick thing on Tesla. I was giving a talk at a tooling conference not too long ago, and every automaker basically, when they build their prototypes, they use prototype tooling. Then they adjust it to create the production tooling. They refine it. What Tesla has done is kind of use the prototype tooling for production. And it's one of the issues I think they face with respect to fit and finish quality. It's going to be very interesting to follow Tesla for the next few years, particularly with the very high market cap and the fact that they're still losing a lot of money and that the only profitable business they have is selling tax credits. On the GM situation, I think it's important to look at because GM has been very disciplined in several ways, pulling out of weak markets, announcing programs on EV, big place in mobility acquisitions, same with autonomous technology. So they've taken a little bit more of a systems approach. And I think Ford now is really beginning to move with Hackett in the same direction. But we're seeing GM stock, it was about 33, 32, 33 when they started, up in the area of 45 now. Ford is down. But I think one of the big stories is going to be a dramatic reversal that we see in Ford as they really push forward on the number of opportunities that they have.
Yeah, okay. So what else is coming down the pike? We've got about a minute and a half to fill here. So what other hot car topics can we talk about?
Well, probably the hardest topic is to understand is the reality of the industry today and how complex and confusing it is. I've given a number of talks here in the last year or so on the auto future. And my title is Auto Future, Fast, Furious, and Uncertain. And I think it really captures well what's going on. And everybody needs to remember that ultimately the success of this industry is going to be based on the willingness of consumers to buy what you make. And you can put, tens of thousands of electric vehicles out there and say these are the greatest things in the world. But if you can't get customers to buy them, it doesn't work. And ultimately, one of the key things that I think we tend to not forget about or to forget about quite often is that the consumer is also a voter. And we've tended to kind of forget about that. But ultimately, the consumer is going to be the final decision maker in this process.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it at that. That's David Cole, the former chairman of the Center for Automotive Research at the University of Michigan, currently the chairman of Auto Harvest, longtime auto specialist. Thanks for being on the show.
And a
today.
Really old guy.
And a really old guy, yes. Yeah, we won't talk about that.
Great to be with you, Mike.
All right, thanks. Well, this is Mike Brennan, and we'll be right back with Maureen Miller-Brosnan. She's going to talk about the Michigan Venture Capital Association nominees for their big awards dinner.
Lawrence Technological University graduates earn a degree and a higher starting salary. In fact, when it comes to earning potential, the Brookings Institution ranks LTU fifth among U.S. colleges and universities. Be enriched. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
As a Lawrence Technological University graduate, you're not only marketable, you're worth more. Yes, more. According to payscale.com, when it comes to graduate salaries, LTU is in America's top 100. Be invaluable. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Hey, it's Mike Brennan, and we are back, and I am flying solo today because Matt is out on personal business. I think he's running some soccer program or announcing or something, or I don't know. Whatever, Matt, you know. So, but this is our 100th show. We were going to launch the Jessica cam and have Matt and I pontificate, but things happen. So, anyway, we have standing by, lousy warm-up there, is Maureen Miller-Brosnan, who's the executive director of the Michigan Venture Capital Association. Welcome, Maureen.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
Oh, doing great. Thanks for asking. And today, I sat on that announcement all weekend, although I got it on Friday. I did post it just before I went to the leave for Royal Oak today to come to the show. So you have your nominees out there, and you have that Dan Gilbert is a nominee, and see other names people might be familiar with. Accelerate Michigan's a nominee. Michigan Growth Capital Symposium's a nominee. Llamasoft,
yeah.
Llamasoft, and then, of course, everybody in the industry knows Ian Bund, the godfather of venture capital, right?
Exactly. And, you know, that's really what this is all about, Mike, is this is the 15th anniversary of the Michigan Venture Capital Association. And for 15 years now, we've been really working hard to highlight and showcase what it is that Michigan does so well. And that is build and grow an entrepreneurial and investment community here in the state. So, you know, now after 15 years, we've got some facts that we can really brag about, and we're going to do that on November the 15th at the Little Caesars Arena in Detroit. And we're excited because we're going to be the first ones to be on the practice ice to host an event there at Little Caesars. So it's going to be a star-filled night, pulling all of the best and the brightest of Michigan's entrepreneurial and investment community together, really to celebrate, you know, celebrating a massive increase in the number of startup companies that are receiving venture capital in the state of Michigan. You know, since we started 15 years ago, we've seen that number grow by 200%, you know, and that's because when people like Ian Bund started the Venture Capital Association, there was little to no activity in that area. So as a result, we've seen 150% increase in the amount of capital invested in local startups. And then you've got people like Jody Vanderwell, who's also a contender for the Lifetime Achievement Award, who's been working out on the west side of the state to bring venture capital or to bring angel capital to startups. And then we look at a 300% increase in the number of venture capital firms that are here in the U.S. And you've got, you know, some of those firms. One of them was founded by our third Lifetime Achievement nominee, Mike Jandernoa. He founded Hope in Life Science Ventures, again, out on the west side of the state. So, you know, a lot of the work that we've prided ourselves on is being done by some amazing people. And November 15th, we're going to get a chance to honor and recognize that.
And I'll be there shooting some videos, and it'll be the first time for me being in Little Caesars Arena. I've watched it being built over the last, 2 years or so, and looks great from the outside, so I can't wait to get on the inside.
Yeah, well, when you get there, we're not only going to be talking about the venture capitalists that have worked to build the industry, we're going to be talking about those entrepreneurs that are the lifeblood of what we're trying to do here in Michigan in creating an entrepreneurial economy. And that's where, you know, you're going to see people like Dan Gilbert, who are central to the revitalization of Detroit and bringing us Rock Ventures and organizations like that that are turning around investing in Michigan's venture capital or in Michigan's entrepreneurial community. So Dan is going to be one of those people that's up for nominees as an Entrepreneur of the Year, along with Kaylin Handeek. He is working with a team of biologists who are all entrepreneurs, and they're building a cancer detecting cancer detection technology that is going to hopefully speed up our ability to detect cancer cells. And then up in that same category is Doug Song and John Oberheide, and they are part of Duo Security. They're the two founders of that company, which is one of our fastest-growing cloud-based cybersecurity companies in the world right now, and that is based right here in Ann Arbor, Michigan. So we're going to get a chance to celebrate investors as well as entrepreneurs.
In some of the community impact awards, I'm obviously familiar with all these people. Accelerate Michigan is that $1 million contest that's coming up in November. And then you got the granddaddy of them all, the Michigan Growth Capital Symposium, founded by David Brophy, gosh, way back in the 80s somewhere, I think. And then the new kid on the block, Techstars Mobility with TED. I'm real familiar with all these companies.
Yeah, and you know, the neat thing about the Community Impact of the Year Award is that really is a new award that was developed this year, and it was put in place so that we would be able to recognize the connections that are being made between research, talent, and capital, you know, all three things that are critical to growth to the entrepreneurial economy here in Michigan. And so in recognizing those three organizations for the amazing amount of work that they're doing in that area of connectivity is vital to being able to tell the good news story of Michigan. So, no, you're exactly right. Accelerate Michigan, by the way, that innovation competition happens the day after our annual awards dinner. Those two events are being done in tandem now last year and again this year. The recipes for success is there with that combination. And they give away $1 million in cash and in-kind prizes in that competition. So it's one of the best places to stop by and take a look at some of the fantastic ideas that are growing and being built right here in the state.
And I think the grand prize is $500,000.
That's correct.
That's even more than you make, Maureen, right?
So it is. A tad bit more than I make, yes.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Then we have some capital events of the year. I'm real familiar with LlamaSoft in Ann Arbor, less familiar with the other two companies, but one of them I should be familiar with. Not sure how to pronounce it. Is that Sirius Therapeutics?
Sirius, yep.
Okay.
Sirius Therapeutics. Yeah, they are an exciting life science startup, research and development operation out in Kalamazoo. And they raised $40.5 million in venture capital funding last year, which is why they're a big contender for this award. They're a spin-out of Metabolic Solutions development companies, the work that they did there. And they've been funded in part by Hope and Life Sciences, again, west side of the state venture firm, as well as Renaissance Venture Capital. So they've been really successful in attracting that early investment that is needed in order to catapult a firm like theirs to do great things. So this is a growing startup company. They employ four people here in the state of Michigan, and they're continuing on to their next phase of clinical trials, and they've already got 150 patients enrolled to date for that clinical trial. So we're excited to see what they're going to be up to next. And then the second one is Deepfield. Deepfield is an information technology startup, and they had one of the most impactful exits in Southeast Michigan in the past decade. They were launched here in Ann Arbor at the University of Michigan, and they got some of their early funding from Michigan venture firms like Resonant Ventures, Mercury Fund, and RPM Ventures. And they're really a cutting-edge technology that is going to revolutionize the networking industry, and they're paving a way for software-defined networking solutions. They're able to do real-time analytics on the performance of systems, which helps to really move business along faster. And then you mentioned that you were really familiar with LlamaSoft, obviously an information technology startup. They're a global leader in that massive field of supply chain modeling and design software. So they're our third contender, and they've had investment from some of our Michigan venture firms like Augment Ventures, MK Capital, and Invest Detroit. So we're looking forward to seeing what they do next now that they've been acquired by the TPG Capital back earlier this year.
Right. I'd heard that they were on the trading block, but they also had a $50 million investment from Goldman Sachs, I think, didn't they?
They did, yes. That was a while ago. But, yep, you're absolutely right. They did. So it's exciting. You know, they employ over 400 people, and they plan to hire an additional 100 to 150 new people in the next year. So proof once again that, you know, when we're talking about building, creating jobs in the state of Michigan, one of the best ways to do that is with these entrepreneurial endeavors.
Hey, why don't we talk about this? Some people may have never heard, I know it's hard to believe, but they've never, maybe have never heard of the Michigan Venture Capital Association. So let's go in a little bit more detail about what you guys do.
Well, we are the trade association that represents the 33 venture capital firms that exist here in the state of Michigan. And I actually love describing those 33 firms. You know, these are brave men and women that invest capital at the very earliest stages when ideas are being conceived. And they invest because they realize it at an early stage that an idea that's capable of solving a problem is one that is worthy of investment and is likely going to grow into a thriving business here in the state. So in addition to investing, venture capitalists also serve on the boards of directors of these startup companies. And these are people that have had experience growing and building businesses from the ground up. So they offer their advice and their counsel and their guidance, as well as the capital that they bring to the projects. So we represent an industry that has $4 billion worth of capital under management, and currently there are 141 venture-backed companies that exist in the state of Michigan. All of these are tried and true and tested ideas that venture capitalists and angel investors are working hard to fund and make sure that they grow into successful and thriving businesses and to make sure that they stay here in Michigan.
And you also include, I'm not sure how many angel groups there are in the state, a dozen or more than a dozen now?
There are 10 right now,
okay.
Yeah, 10 active angels.
And let's differentiate. A lot of people may not, I hear it all the time, I'm just going to go get some venture capital. And I go, whoa, wait a minute. That's like further on down the line. That you have to be a very, you know, stable company or have a fantastic product with a lot of market potential. I mean, it really starts out initially with probably your own money, then friends and family, and then you get to angels who maybe invest, what, a couple hundred thousand dollars in a deal or something like that?
Yeah, that's exactly the way that it goes. It's kind of the ripple effect, you know. You start with the people that are closest to you, the friends and family funding, and that's usually what gets you off the ground. And then a lot of times angels are our very earliest source of investment, you know, usually up to right around $250,000, sometimes $500,000. But after that, that's when you find that startups usually will turn to venture investors. And, you know, if you're interested in having somebody, like I say, serve on your board of directors, take a piece of equity in the company, help you to build and grow the company, then venture investors become the next phase. And again, they're taking high risks at a very early stage in high growth, high technology businesses. I think that's the other part that people don't recognize is that a lot of consumer products, a lot of services will oftentimes talk about getting venture capital backing. But typically, venture capitalists stay in a pretty narrow lane of high-tech, high-growth businesses, usually in the life sciences or technology arenas.
Okay, we're almost out of time, so if folks want to attend the dinner, how do they do that?
Well, they can go to the website, and that's the best place. There's a registration link right on the front page. Our site is www.michiganvca.org. And again, the event is November the 15th, 15th anniversary on the 15th, and we're going to be at the Little Caesars Arena.
Okay. That's Maureen Miller-Brosnan, the Executive Director of the Michigan Venture Capital Association. Thanks for being on the show today.
Thanks, Mike. Good talking to you.
All right. And we'll be right back with Dan Lerman. He's going to scare you with some tales from the cybersecurity world. Stand by.
Lawrence Technological University graduates earn a degree and a higher starting salary. In fact, when it comes to earning potential, the Brookings Institution ranks LTU fifth among U.S. colleges and universities. Be enriched. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
As a Lawrence Technological University graduate, you're not only marketable, you're worth more. Yes, more. According to payscale.com, when it comes to graduate salaries, LTU is in America's top 100. Be invaluable. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Lawrence Technological University is more than a school. It's a launchpad for your future, offering industry-leading facilities and 100-plus programs that are ranked among the nation's best. Be unstoppable. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
What do you get at Lawrence Technological University? Everything. Great labs and studios, supportive professors, plus a full campus life, NAIA athletics, and all the software you need to succeed. Be smart. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Lawrence Technological University is all about opportunities. You learn beyond the campus, doing real-world research for top companies and honing your skills through co-ops and internships. Apply what you learn. Be challenged. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Lawrence Technological University graduates earn a degree and a higher starting salary. In fact, when it comes to earning potential, the Brookings Institution ranks LTU fifth among U.S. colleges and universities. Be enriched. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
What do you get at Lawrence Technological University? Everything. Great labs and studios, supportive professors, plus a full campus life, NAIA athletics, and all the software you need to succeed. Be smart. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
As a Lawrence Technological University graduate, you're not only marketable, you're worth more. Yes, more. According to payscale.com, when it comes to graduate salaries, LTU is in America's top 100. Be invaluable. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Lawrence Technological University graduates earn a degree and a higher starting salary. In fact, when it comes to earning potential, the Brookings Institution ranks LTU fifth among U.S. colleges and universities. Be enriched. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Okay. Hey, Dan, how are you today? This is Dan Lorman calling in from the Lansing area. I think you're in Grand Ledge, and he's with Security Mentor.
That's exactly right. Hey, they're doing well. Thanks, guys.
That's why we just played that LTU ad about 10 times, so that'll make them happy.
Sorry, I'm late. Yeah, I was, internal technical difficulties, but everything's going great.
Okay, good. So anyway, I wanted to talk to you. We were going to talk about Kaspersky last time.
Yep.
Now we definitely need to talk about Kaspersky, because not only did the government ban them from future use for government employees, now we're getting reports that, gosh darn, that Eugene, he may have been working with the FSB folks at Russian security, and then the software may be doing more than it's supposed to be doing. So what do you, you probably have more and better details than I do. What are you hearing?
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny because the people, a lot of the people in the know don't want to talk about it, but you know, the reality is that that there clearly has been some things found that they're linking back to Kaspersky Labs and government computers, especially some let's say three-letter agencies in Washington linking things back to them. In a number of different cyber attacks, and I think the details, the problem always, this is always the catch 22, Mike, is the catch 22 is, you know, if people tell us all the specifics that they know and the smoking gun, if you will, then they have to, you know, they're violating their clearance, and then that's what therein is the problem. But all reports show that there is a direct linkage back to Kaspersky in a number of the different let's just say hacks that are out there in the last several months.
It's talk about the death stroke for a company. I mean, who at this point is going to trust Kaspersky?
Well, therein is the real challenge. I mean, I think if people are using it, what else is being captured? You know, I've actually, you know, my views on this have kind of evolved over the last year, and I was like, you know, my response was pretty much on a personal level. You know, people were asking me, and we've talked about it on this call, would I use them? You know, I use the free antivirus and things that I get with Comcast cable, so it's a bundle package, and I, you know, it's kind of like kind of avoiding the question. It was a bridge I didn't need to cross because, you know, I was using another package. But, you know, given the opportunity, I wasn't so much against it. I think now the challenge is what backdoors are, you know, what data is being mined, what is it being used for. And so I think we clearly have a new day, if you will. I mean, I think my fear with going down that road of saying don't use Kaspersky is that would there be some kind of retaliation? You know, the fear from other governments around the world that Symantec or McAfee are doing the same thing to them, that, you know, there's some kind of an agent of the U.S. government. I'm not suggesting that's going to happen or that's happening. These are global companies. But I think there's, you know, are we going to be getting into a new day, if you will? We're entering a new time when the challenge becomes what companies are using what data, what is that data being shared with the U.S. government, with three-letter agencies in Washington, what other backdoors are out there, into what systems. You know, it really does open up Pandora's box.
It's always been sort of a movie scenario in my head. Maybe I should do this screenplay or something. That it's actually these guys like Kaspersky and McAfee and all that that are behind all the hacks and things so that you buy their software. It's like the mafia, you know, buying protection from the mafia. I know that I'm not saying that's what's going on, but it was always an interesting scenario that I was thinking of. And then when this actually happened with Kaspersky, I thought, you know, so
No, you're raising a great point. I think honestly, I don't believe that's happening. I don't believe they're the ones that are in fact, McAfee or Symantec or other security companies planning the malware out there so that they can then offer you the solution. That's kind of what's happening in the ransomware world, right?
Where
they're planting things and they give you the encryption, de-encryption if you pay.
And they may not even do that, right? They just take your money and say,
exactly.
Too bad.
But I think the challenge that why I'm hesitating so much, and this is a little bit uncharacteristic for me, but the challenge becomes, what Pandora's box are we opening? I mean, certainly if I was a U.S. business out there right now and I had Kaspersky, I would be asking a lot of tough questions of them. And there's a lot of, details of my federal government partners, classified programs and things. That federal government has been told, get it off your computers. I know that's being discussed in a lot of offices right now inside the Washington Beltway, and a lot of more details that we can't discuss openly. But I would just tell you that I really do feel like this is a really interesting new twist, not just with Kaspersky, but with other vendors. What are they using that data? For years, Google and Twitter and other people have said, the old line we've all heard 100 times. Now, recently, is that, if the product is free, then you are basically the product. Basically, they're going to take your data and they're going to use it in other ways. So how was this data, that Kaspersky had on these different government customers being used? How was that happening? And I think one of the challenges going forward is with all the vendors now globally, who is working with what governments? I mean, I think that question has now become an open question. Will there be, for example, will the Russian government, I haven't heard of it yet, will they say you can't have McAfee or Symantec in Russia?
Yeah, you'd think that'd be the next step. Particularly, I don't know this for a fact. You probably know more than I do, but I'm told that Putin and Eugene Kaspersky are longtime friends. Now, that does not necessarily mean they're in cahoots, but it does mean that there's an association there. So I don't know what's going to happen. But I do know they're a $750 million company, very big company.
Oh, yeah.
And this is
huge. And I totally agree. And I think you got to be we have to be a little bit careful with those kinds of who's friends with who. There was talk that Tillerson was friend of Putin, and he's the Secretary of State.
Right.
And there's pictures of him getting awards in Russia. And I mean, I think some of that is overblown. I mean, Bill Gates probably knows all these people, right? Doesn't necessarily make him a spy. But I mean, the reality is that I think that in this case, there's obviously been something very, very serious. We know that the federal government has made this declaration formally that, federal government computers cannot have Kaspersky software on it. And I think that is a real red flag for, obviously, others in the business community in the U.S. to take note of that. And I think that there's going to be, maybe if it doesn't happen between now and Christmas, it's going to be one of my predictions for 2018, a little preview of coming attractions, where foreign companies will start, if it hasn't already happened before then, foreign companies are going to start doing some of the same things with U.S. companies.
Right, probably so. So Equifax, turns out they had another little mishap.
Oh, yeah. Well, it just seems like it's more and more and more. We just continue to see, since we've talked last, Deloitte has had a major issue. There's been some others as well, and it's almost daily. We're seeing new breaches, new headlines. Did a whole blog series on this whole issue. That a lot of these are actually not super advanced attacks. There are things that could have been prevented had they done the basic blocking and tackling in the cyber world, but unfortunately, we saw new issues arising on several companies in the last few weeks.
Why is it you're a CISO, former CISO, and you've been in this world forever? I mean, you even worked at the NSA when you first started your career. Why is it these people who are in charge of this security aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing? What's the problem? I don't understand.
Yeah. Well, you're raising a great point. I mean, I think the challenge always is there's different levels, and I'll get this to you. You can post it, you know, out there. I think, you know, I almost use the analogy to people like sports teams. You know, there are times when the best teams play the best teams, and someone's going to win, someone's going to lose. You know, you're kind of overpowered by Russia or China or some foreign nation state is going up against your business. But a lot of times it's not that. You know, you see, and I use the analogy in the sports world of you know, a inferior team comes in and pulls an upset. You know, it happens all the time in the Big Ten. You know, you have, you know, but it's almost like that in the cyberspace where, you know, had the right patches been applied, had the two-factor authentication been used in the case of the Deloitte hack, had, you know, these are things that they know. They know better than to do that. And in fact, they implement that for other people. They are very smart people, very good people. They know how to implement these things. But in many cases, you know, it's mistake, it's overconfidence. Sometimes people take risks, they cut corners. I think sometimes people don't bring their A team. They've got the people, you know, but they bring in the B team, or they bring the A team in initially, and then they swap them out for the B team or the C team, and before you know it, the interns are running things. And nothing against interns, but, you know, maybe they're doing something they're not qualified to do. So I think the challenge becomes maintaining the vigilance, almost like a top football team. You know, if they're overconfident, if they don't prepare, they're going to come in and they're going to get beat. And I think that happens. It's a hard challenge for security teams. They maybe have the processes and procedures in place. They maybe know, especially for these big companies that have billions in profits, they know what to do. And in many cases, they do it, but then they let their guard down, or they don't do it, they don't follow through, they don't have the vigilance, and then that's when these breaches are happening. So, I mean, I think we're seeing that. Studies have shown 80% of breaches could probably have been avoided had the right etiquette been put in place, the right policies, procedures, and technology in place. I think there are some that are, you know, kind of overwhelming people, but in many cases, it's just letting your guard down and not being vigilant.
Yeah, it's kind of like the plumber with the leaky pipes or something, right?
Well, it could be. Yeah, absolutely. Or, you know, I'll get to that when I'm willing to take the risk. You know, it's not so bad, and then all of a sudden the pipe bursts, you know. Right. And I think, yeah, it could be. That's a really good analogy too, Mike. I mean, I think, you know, you got to look at, you know, certainly there is a talent. You know, there are all these other issues we've talked about, you know, shortages of talent in cyber, shortages of other problems of not, you know, keeping your best people and maybe jumping ship and going over to some other company, and it's hard to keep good people. I think all of those are real issues, but I think for qualified people that know what they're doing, that have the right tools, they've got to remain vigilant and continue to do the right things day in, day out, and put those practices in place. And if they don't, you know, bad things are going to happen to them.
Got about a minute left. This is where you can put in the shameless plug for Security Mentor.
Thanks, Mike. I appreciate it. Yeah, so Security Mentor, we do security awareness training, and our focus is on brief, frequent, and focused content. So, you know, one topic, you know, 10-minute lesson, engaging, interactive, fun training that's year-round. It's not just kind of a once-a-year, check-the-box kind of thing, but, you know, really try and make it engaging, interactive. We have new lessons all the time, new topics like Internet of Things, and also covering important topics like phishing and password and two-factor authentication, those kinds of things. So you can read more about it at securitymentor.com, and I'm available. My blogs are at Lorman on Cybersecurity, and Twitter at GovCSO, GovCSO.
I think you also write for Forbes from time to time, don't you?
Yeah, I write for several different magazines, quite a bit. Actually, VentureBeat, Forbes. I've written for a couple of other different ones. Like I said, Government Technology is my weekly blog, but I also write for CSO Magazine, and I write for several other business magazines on a regular basis.
We're going to have to leave it at that. Dan Lorman, security mentor, thanks for being on the show today.
Thank you very much, Mike. Have a great week.
Hey, you too. All right. Well, that wraps the show. Hopefully, Matt will be with us next week. Jessica's always with us, so I feel very secure there. This is Mike Brennan, and you've been listening to M Squared TechCast on the Podcast Detroit Network.
Thanks for listening to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Join your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan, next Monday at 3 p.m. If you can't listen live, audio podcasts of the show can be found at podcastdetroit.com.